Before beginning the study of Leviticus 4, I'd like to have you turn to a text in Hebrews, the 8th chapter. Let's just read together the first 5 verses, and then we'll note carefully the 5th verse. Now the things which we have spoken, this is the sum. The word there means the head point, the top. We have such an high priest who is set on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and the true tabernacle which the Lord pitched and not man. For every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices, wherefore it is of necessity that this man have somewhat also to offer. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law, who serve under the example and shadow of heavenly things. As Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle, foresee, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern showed thee to thee in the mount. Now we have taken that verse from Exodus. In other words, that he was to make all things according to the pattern shown in the mount. And we've applied that principally to the articles of furniture. And we have worked up multiple meanings to the various parts of those furniture items. But that's not what this verse says, and this is not the interpretation that's given to that verse here by Paul in Hebrews. He says that the priest, as far as that first sanctuary was concerned, served unto an example and shadow of heavenly things. The emphasis is not on the articles, it's on the service pertaining thereto in the sanctuary, who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things. And so it's the ritual that was carried on, the service, that carries with it the import and the significance and the meaning for us. That's not saying that they were not, as it were, examples of things in heaven. But when you stop to actually compare with the Old and New Testament, the sanctuary as it was built with the New Testament, you have no reference in the New Testament to the table of showbread. You have the altar of incense. You have the Ark of the Covenant. You have the golden candlesticks. And remember in the Revelation, the golden candlesticks of the 4th chapter and the candlesticks of the 1st chapter, which the Son of Man walks, are two different sets of two different concepts expressed in two different ways in the Greek. They're not identical. And so therefore, you do have a difference between the type and the antitype as far as the structural nature is concerned and the actual articles of furniture. But the emphasis here is they serve unto an example and shadow of heavenly things. And it's when we understand the service that was performed in the earthly sanctuary, in the daily and the yearly, that we have the heart of the Adventist message. And we have a clarification and an understanding of what it means to us at this very hour. And so this afternoon, we will study Leviticus, the 4th chapter that has to do with the individual or the daily. And also then tomorrow afternoon we will study the yearly from Leviticus the 16th chapter and see what we find, just what the scripture says. And so what I'm doing without notes. And let's begin reading. Now on this little diagram that you have, I have listed the 4 different categories of individuals that are noted here for the services that are outlined in the 4th chapter of Leviticus. And so we'll read, beginning with the 4th chapter, we'll read, start with the first verse. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a soul sin through ignorance, we might as well pause at that point, all of the earthly services of the sanctuary, the offerings that were required, involved sins of ignorance. I know, but these are sins of ignorance when they come to their knowledge. But it's not deliberate sin. Premeditated sin is not covered in the sanctuary service of the Old Testament. David understood that. In the 51st Psalm, when he deliberately sinned, he said, if it were possible, I would bring. All is required. And then you find Paul in his sermon at the church there in Antioch in Pisidia. He says that Christ, in his sacrifice, took care of sins which were impossible or were not under the old covenant, the things that were not involved in the old sanctuary service. So these are sins of ignorance once they come to the mind of the individual, and here is the prescribed ceremony. The purpose is, what do they mean to us? Only what Paul says. They serve unto an example and shadow of heavenly things. And so let's learn the lesson. If a soul sin through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done, and shall do according to any of them, if the priest that is anointed do sin according to the sin of the people, a better translation of this from the Hebrew is that if the priest or the priest that is anointed do cause the congregation to sin. In other words, if he does certain things that causes the congregation to sin or is held accountable, then there's certain things to be done. Let him bring for his sin, which he hath sinned, a young bullock without blemish unto the Lord for a sin offering. And he shall bring the bullock unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord, and shall lay his hand upon the bullock's head and kill the bullock before the Lord. And the priest that is anointed shall take of the bullock's blood and bring it to the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle the blood 7 times before the Lord, before the veil of the sanctuary. And the priest shall put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before the Lord, which is in the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall pour all the blood of the bullock at the bottom of the altar of the burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he shall take off from it all the fat of the bullock from the sin offering, the fat that covereth the inwards, and the fat that upon the inwards, the 2 kidneys, and the fat that's upon them, which is by the flanks, and the caul upon the liver, and which is with the kidneys, it shall he take away, as it was taken off from the bullock of the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest shall burn them upon the altar of the burnt offering. And the skin of the bullock, and all his flesh with his head, and with his legs, and his inwards, and his dung, even the whole bullock shall he carry forth without the camp, unto a clean place where the ashes are poured out, and burn him on the wood with fire where the ashes are poured out, out shall he be burnt. All right, we find here then this first category of a priest causing the congregation to sin. It's the sin that he himself causes them to sin. All right, let me give you an illustration. Is Israel held accountable for the death of Christ? Who caused the people to sin? See, and Paul calls it ignorance, and that I will that they did it through ignorance. But who caused the people to crucify Christ? The leadership. And so he's talking about here, I don't know the exact explanation of this because I know, but I'm telling you it's in the Hebrew, in the Revised Standard Version, it gives you that explanation from the Hebrew. If the priest that is anointed to cause the people to sin. See?
Well, then that's different than verse 14.
Yeah, if the whole congregation sin on their own. See, one is if the priest causes the congregation to sin, is involved in it, and if the whole congregation sins. Now, let's notice. The first thing, the officiating priest for this very sin is in turn the high priest, the priest that is anointed. The priest that is anointed involved in his own act as far as the confession and the animal and all that pertains thereto. In other words, the high priest officiates when it is a corporate congregational sin involvement. That's number one. Number two, what about the disposition of blood? Let's notice. The priest, this is the eighth verse, no, the fifth verse. And the priest is anointed shall take of the bullock's blood and bring it to the tabernacle of the congregation, and the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle the blood 7 times before the Lord, before the veil of the sanctuary. The blood in this instance is carried into the sanctuary and sprinkled before the veil. And the seventh verse says, and the priest shall put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before the Lord. In other words, there is some of the blood is put upon the horns of the altar of incense that's before the Lord in the first apartment of the tabernacle. And then it says, and he shall pour all the blood of the bullock at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. The blood is carried in. A record of the confession is made. It is sprinkled before the veil. The balance of the blood is brought out and poured at the base of the altar of burnt offering in the court. Now that is that process. Now, I might also cite another illustration of what I use from the Scriptures as far as Israel and the priest is concerned. How much of the compromise of 1955 and 56 with the evangelicals was done by the laity who caused the people to sin? Again, the leadership. This is an example of this particular type of sin. Now, I can find no record where it's ever been carried out in the Old Testament or even in the New. After all, when it was committed in the New Testament, they were standing at the very borders of their probation's end. And actually, for the leadership, it ended then, and in just a few years, the whole nation and the corporate body ended in 34 A.D. But here is this illustration, and it serves unto example and shadow of heavenly things. But the interesting thing is, in this instance, there is nothing said about forgiveness. There is no resulting from forgiveness. Now this should cause us to do a little thinking. When the priest that is anointed who caused the people to sin, no forgiveness is reported. Not that there is not available, but it's not here. It's not emphasized. Now let's move to the second category, Leviticus 4, 13 to 21. And if the whole congregation of Israel sin through ignorance, and the thing be hid from the eyes of the assembly, they have done somewhat against the commandment of the Lord concerning things which ought should not be done and are guilty. When the sin which they have sinned against it is known, then the congregation shall offer a young bullock for sin and bring him before the tabernacle of the congregation. The same measure of offering, bullock. And the elders of the congregation shall lay their hands upon the head of the bullock before the Lord, and the bullock shall be killed before the Lord. And the priest that is anointed shall bring the bullock's blood to the tabernacle of the congregation, and the priest shall dip his finger in some of the blood and sprinkle it seven times before the Lord, even before the veil. And he shall put some of the blood in the horns of the altar which is before the Lord, that is, in the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall pour out all the blood at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. He shall take all his fat from him and burn it upon the altar, and he shall do with the bullock as he did with the bullock for a sin offering, so that he shall do with this. And the priest shall make an atonement for them, and it shall be forgiven them. He carries forth the bullock without the camp, burns it as he burned the first bullock. It is a sin offering for the congregation. Now notice the process again. The officiating priest was the priest that is anointed, the high priest. The blood again was taken in, sprinkled before the veil, placed upon the altar, horns of the altar of incense, but the balance of the blood was again brought out and put around the altar of burnt offering which is in the court. But what was the result? And the priest shall make an atonement, and it shall be forgiven him. And so the result of the offer, in this case, the whole congregation, they received, there was an atonement made, and forgiveness was extended. Now, again, it's interesting to note that there was an atonement involving the sacrifice at the altar of burnt offering for the whole congregation. And if we understand the altar of burnt offering as symbolic of the cross, it was in the court, then we must admit that the type teaches that there was an atonement at the cross. All right. Then it becomes... Then it was, in other words, this is a confession of sin and a recognition that they sinned. But the point is, what is the message that's there? There was an atonement at the altar in the court. And that atonement resulted in forgiveness. All right, now let's go to the next category. When a ruler has sinned. All right, now let's just think a little bit. A ruler has sinned. All right. All right, now just a minute. It says, "And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, shall be chief over the chief of the Levites and have the oversight of them to keep the charge of the sanctuary." That word for chief in Numbers 3:32 is the identical word for ruler in Leviticus 4:22. Right, but he was still in the category of the ruler. In other words, when the priest individually sinned through ignorance and whatever there, he came in the category of the individual as a ruler, chief. Beg your pardon? In other words, when the priest sinned as an individual, the same as a chieftain of a tribe, then he came under the category here of the ruler, category of sin. And if he sins as an individual, then he comes under this category, and not in the categories if he caused the whole congregation to sin. Or all the chieftains of the tribes, they came under the category of the ruler. Now let's notice the differentiation. Let's go back to Leviticus 4. When a ruler has sinned, and done somewhat through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord his God concerning things which should not be done, and is guilty, or if his sin wherein he has sinned come to his knowledge, he shall bring his offering, a kid of the goats, a male without blemish. He shall lay his hand upon the head of the goat and kill it in the place where they kill the burnt offering before the Lord. It is a sin offering. And the priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering and shall pour out his blood at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering. All right? The priest that is anointed does not minister in this case. The common priest ministers for the individual. The high priest ministers in corporate transgression. The common priest ministers in individual transgression. Now notice what they do. And he puts it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering and shall pour out his blood at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering. The blood of the individual, when he offers for himself and making confession of sin, that blood is carried no further than the altar of the court. Putting on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and the balance again poured at the base. Now let's go further. And he shall burn his fat upon the altar and the fat of the as the fat of the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest shall make an atonement for him as concerning his sin, and it shall be forgiven him. Again, the common priest makes an atonement where? At the altar in the court, which results in forgiveness. Now let's go to the 27th verse. And if any one of the common people sin through ignorance, which he doeth somewhat against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done and be guilty, or if his sin which he has sinned come to his knowledge, then he shall bring his offering, a kid of the goats, a female without blemish, for his sin which he has sinned. And he shall lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering and slay the sin offering in the place of the burnt offering. And the priest shall take of the blood thereof with his finger, and shall put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and pour out all the blood thereof at the bottom of the altar. He shall take away also the fat thereof, and so forth, as the fat is taken away from off the sacrifice of the peace offerings, and the priest shall burn it upon the altar for a sweet savor unto the Lord, and the priest shall make an atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. Again, the emphasis is what? An atonement where? In the court at the altar of burnt offering, and the result is forgiveness. And then it says if he brings a lamb for a sin offering instead of the other, and the process is the same, the blood is put on the horns of the altar in the court, the blood poured at the base. The priest then makes an atonement for him, which, for that which he hath committed, and it shall be forgiven him. Now I want you to notice now, as we cover this fourth chapter, certain things stand out as you filled in your chart. Now maybe we've gone too fast to fill in everything. Alright, but you can follow it through and fill it in at your convenience, but I want you to notice now certain things. When it comes to corporate confession, the high priest enters the ministry and carries the blood into the first apartment and there records the confession. When it comes to the individual sin and confession, the blood is never taken into the sanctuary, but remains recorded on the altar of burnt offering in the court. But in both instances, an atonement is realized by the individual, resulting in forgiveness. Now, this should clear up some of our thinking, and that we might think clearly on these things. There is no record of confession, or if you even speak of it as sin, no record ever taken into the sanctuary for the individual. And this needs to be carefully analyzed, and that we, upon whom present truth devolves, the duty to advance our understanding of the sanctuary, this should make us move forward in an understanding of that sanctuary service. Furthermore, if by that offering was the means by which the sin was recorded, the best way to keep it away from God and not have it recorded against you is not sacrifice. In other words, if it's a recording of the sin by this act, and it should, as it's popularly taught, goes in, then the best way to keep God from having any knowledge of your sin or any record is just not make any sacrifice. There's no record then. But that's not the point. The point is that this is an act of confession and a transfer of the sin by which an atonement may come to the individual. Forgiveness. And what does that atonement mean? If my sin has been forgiven to such an extent that I have an atonement once more with God, it's saying that I can stand before God as if I did not sin. And that's what forgiveness means. The privilege of standing before God as if I had not sinned. Now, standing in God's presence to live forever, that's a different story. That will require something else. That's the yearly service. But the daily service, I get an atonement that results in forgiveness. And so what are we doing today? In our zeal to react to those that deny the final atonement, and there are those who deny it, and you know who I'm talking about, and you know what I'm talking about. Then in our zeal to deny it, we deny the atonement at the cross. And put it out here. No, there is a dual atonement. There's no question you have the Day of Atonement, so you can't argue on the final atonement. But on the daily service, there is an atonement. And we need to recognize that fact. So Adventists, originally, when they accepted the full picture of Leviticus, did believe in a dual atonement. And the sanctuary. And I probably should have brought my little model sanctuary in here so that you could see it. You had the altar in the court, one center of activity, and on the Day of Atonement you had the center of activity in the most holy place. The two aspects. Now there's another aspect of this. The priests. The high priest ministered on corporate. And the blood went into the sanctuary, into the first apartment. For the individual, be he a ruler or a common person, the common priest officiated. And how did he officiate? You see, not only did he put the blood there, but because the blood was not taken in, the priest ate apart of the victim, the common person. In other words, he became partakers with the sinner. He, the victim, became standing for the sinner. He partook of it. He identified himself with the sinner, with the sacrifice, the common priest. Now think. When? When he went back to heaven. What was he on earth? Common priest. Could he forgive sins? That you might know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, he said the one, take up thy bed and walk. What? Right, right. He had dual role. Alright, but he was the one that forgave sins as the common priest. Now, just a minute, you caught my thought on that one. As a common priest, he partook of that victim. Inasmuch as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he likewise himself took part of the same. He took our nature, our fallen nature. And so you have in the picture of the sanctuary, as you study this fourth chapter through carefully, verse by verse, the whole sanctuary basic doctrine of Adventism plus the incarnation concept is all woven together in one unit. Thus, when the sanctuary is destroyed, and the teachings of the sanctuary are destroyed, the very foundations of Adventism are destroyed. And this is exactly what we need to understand and be careful about in our study. And the only way that we're going to keep this thing straight and understand it is to take the verses in the chapter just as they are, step by step. And outline it, and here's what it says. Here are the facts. Now, what do these facts say to us? What are they speaking to us? How are we to relate to them? And this will help us better to understand the work and the ministry in the heavenly sanctuary once we understand the work here in this earthly sanctuary. Now, I wish it were possible for us to go into Leviticus 16 before we study tomorrow in Daniel, the seventh chapter, but I can't work it that way. And we're going to probably bring them pretty close together as we study together tomorrow in Daniel 7, as far as the prophecy is concerned, and also tomorrow afternoon as we come to the 16th chapter of Leviticus and study the final atonement and its significance. But I want you to point out, I want you to keep in mind one thing. You will observe here that the ruler is the priest as an individual, whether it be high priest or common priest. And he entered into the sin offering of the individual. But nowhere on the Day of Atonement will we find that the common priest that carried the sin, that there's ever an atonement made for him in relationship to the Day of Final Atonement. In other words, there's a break there because they're not related. And we need to understand that. Just look ahead and think about that. And when we come to Daniel 7 and we put this whole thing together, you'll find a beautiful outline and array of truth. Perhaps not exactly as you thought of it before, but remember our responsibility upon whom present truth has come devolves the duty of developing that truth to a higher plane than when we have received it. Now, do you have any questions on what we've covered? Just a minute, I want to cut first. Just wait a minute. I want to cut first.